What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the PFN Scouting Podcast. Ian Cummings here with my good friend, fantasy football analyst for PFN, Derek Tate. AJ, unfortunately, is no longer with us, resigned to pursue a full-time opportunity, but we wish him all the best. He filled in after Dalton left to pursue independent ventures as well, and always had a great time talking draft with AJ. He knows his stuff, so make sure you follow what he's doing. But I'm here with Derek today. Derek, a good friend. We've done a few podcasts on the fantasy side before, and he knows his stuff. He's been pitching in on the scouting side as well, getting some reports out there for offensive playmakers. And you just got off a podcast talking with guys again, talking with Fitz. Are you tired yet? Are you exhausted? Are you in need of a recharge? Are you still going strong?
Well, and that's why I have the, Dwayne of the Rock Johnson did not pay me for this promotion, but I'm drinking a little bit of Zoe. It's only my second one of the morning. I'm still juiced up. They had to cut me off on the fantasy football podcast, talking some of these prospects because I wanted to make sure that we got started on time, but I'm happy to, that was kind of a warm up. This is the real thing now, man. That was a mock podcast. So this is the real deal with you right now, my friend. Thanks for having
me. Yeah. Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Mock podcast, man. Every time I hear the word mock, I cringe a little bit because I've written like 12 at this point, you know, like once every month. Like we're only one more in April, but we're getting to the home stretch. We got one more month to project different team prospect fits, and that's the best part of the cycle for me, honestly, is kind of going through different outcomes and kind of exploring what's out there and what could potentially happen, right? But you can only go so far with that before you start diving into the individual prospects and in the process and the tape watching and the scouting, right? So before we get into the nitty-gritty, today's topic is offensive playmakers. We did a mock draft, post-free agency mock draft last week, so if you want to go back and check that out, you can. But today we're going to the offensive side of the ball, talking about some of our favorite prospects on that side and favorite playmakers, and also just going through the class on that side of the ball. But first off, Derek, I want to ask you about the process and how you go through the scouting process, because everyone does it a little bit differently. And I think you being a fantasy football analyst, there's a unique perspective here, because every single cycle, the scouting analytics debate rages on. My stance has always been that you need a little bit of both, right? You can't be closed off to any particular facet, but where do you stand on that spectrum? Are you a little bit more towards one way, or are you kind of the mind that you need a marriage of the two to get a cohesive valuation of a player?
The perfect harmony, I would say, is to have a little bit of both, right? Because the data does help when it comes to trying to project a specific skill set or body type or measurement at a specific position, right? So I take into account that when trying to formulate an opinion. So obviously you're taking a look at a player's size, their weight, their wingspan. You do take a look at their college production, but ultimately I'm more of a tape guy, like, cause there is so much context required when you're taking a look at someone's numbers, whether it is their height, weight, 40 time, you know, their other testing metrics and their collegiate production. Like, you know, there's a lot of nuance when it comes to that. There's guys that transfer, there's guys that get injured. There's, you know, different schemes and coaching staffs and the positional changes even times. So there's a lot of context required on those two fronts. Although it's useful data, ultimately, the data that speaks to me is what I see on tape, because that's what transfers. That's what we're talking about when they're going to be going onto the football field. That is the most valuable information, is what they've done on the football field. So I always lean to the tape, but I certainly like taking into account the other data input aspects that go into making a prospect profile.
So as an NFL draft, as a scouting guy on the film side, I'm going to clip that and post it on Twitter and be like, yeah, take that, analytics people. No, I'm kidding. I agree. I think you need a marriage of both. You know, it's one of those things where we see it happen every year. It's a big debate. But I think, you know, to get the most complete picture, right? That's what scouting is, getting the most complete picture of a prospect that you can, so that most of your questions that you have answers, at least. You're never going to have all the answers that you want, right? There's always going to be an element of projection, uncertainty. That just comes with the name of the game. But if you can get the most complete picture, numbers in the film backs it up. Now, it is a little, you know, they feed into each other too, I think. I think there are things that, you know, you see in the numbers that can be communicated on film. Like, just for an example, Malachi Corley, right? You know, probably has some of the highest rack output out there, right? You know, most yards after contact. You'll see that on film, right? The dude is a bowling ball. He's explosive. There are things, tangible things on film that can produce the numbers that you see. So I think they go hand in hand too. So finding that as well in yards per route run, right? If you have a high yards per route run, probably one of the premier weapons in your offense. Other guys aren't funneling away targets, and you can get open. You command targets, right? You know, the ball comes your way because you're open and available for your quarterback, right? So just things like that, where I think that, you know, it can point to something that's visible on the film. So that's how you go to extracting that from the film. So it's a really nuanced process. I wanted to get your take on it because everyone's is different and it's so fascinating to me. But let's reverse engineer it and start talking about this 2024 NFL Draft offensive playmaker class, because it's gotten a lot of hype over the past few months, and I think deservedly so. I think you look at, you know, the running back class is a little bit weaker at the top. We don't have a Bijan Robinson or a Jahmyr Gibbs, but we do have a few intriguing guys, sleepers on day three that we'll get to. The wide receiver class is absolutely stacked. I know we talked about that on the fantasy podcast a couple weeks ago, man. There's just too many names to talk about with that. Right. And then you've got tight end as well. Brock Bowers is a phenomenal prospect, but guys like Ben Sinnott, Jatavion Sanders, Jared Wiley, you know, Cade Stover, you know, I think there are some gems in that group too. So you've had a chance to get a little bit in depth, a little bit deeper with the offensive playmaker class, with the work you've done on the scouting side, but also the fantasy projections. What's your initial takeaway so far? How are you feeling about that?
I think it's a special group as far as the pass catchers go. I mean, we have Brock Bowers that certainly tops the list at the tight end position, and that's one of the first guys I want to talk about. But the collection of talent, we always kind of reference, or at least I like to reference, the 2014 draft class when it comes to wide receivers, because you're talking about how deep that position was. You had Sammy Watkins, who was actually a disappointment in the NFL as the first wide receiver off the board, but then pretty much everybody else didn't disappoint. We've got like Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry was a great, I think it was either a day two or a day three pick, if I remember. I forget if he went in the fourth or third round, but he was exceptional to start his NFL career with the Miami Dolphins. Allen Robinson was great at Penn State and went on day two to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Brandon Cooks was also, I think, a first round pick for the New Orleans Saints. So I start looking and going tit for tat with this, you know, 10 years later with the 2024 wide receiver group. I see a lot of similarities, and I think at the top, we actually got we have better prospects
than what we did back in 2014. It feels absurd to say, right? Because we got this production that we can point to at the NFL level, like say, oh, these guys were really good, but like then you look at the prospects we have in this class and they haven't even done anything yet. But we can just look at the film and the production, like there's really nothing not to like, or very few things not to like, especially with that big three at the top, I feel like.
And call me crazy, Ian, and I want to get your take on this, because the more I watch Romo Dunze, mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time not putting him at number two. I feel like maybe the range of outcomes, or maybe the polish and refinement feels a little bit safer than Malik Nabers, but the ceiling is so high with Nabers because he's such a special mover, man. And then like, oh, I'm having a hard time.
It's tough. It really is. They're very closely graded for me, and I'm kind of in the same frame of mind as you, where Nabers is that explosive powder keg, man. Like he's the things that you can do with him is a weapon, right? You know, kind of similar phraseology to a Brock Bowers, where he's the guy you just scheme the ball to. And with Nabers, it's his instant explosiveness, how he can get to 0 to 100 in a blink. And then he's got the long strides to make the most of space too. He's really agile, very physical after the catch. You know, I just think that explosive firecracker element that he provides to an offense is something that's really hard to replicate, right? And you look at Romo Dunze, like by all means, he's not a bad athlete. He's a great athlete. He ran a 4.45, I think it's 6.3, 212, right? So I think his size-adjusted fluidity, the route running, the body control, the catch mm-hmm. point, like how he plays the ball with patience and discipline, you know, controlling leverage against DBs is really special too. So it's like, it's kind of a pick your poison, pick your flavor type of argument for those guys. And it's tough because you don't want to put one as wide receiver three. You just want to put both at wide receiver two if right. you could, but there's only one silver medal to give, and it's tough. But I'm in the same camp as you. I flip on them every day. I lean Nabers, I think, because I do think there are route running building blocks in place that can allow him to grow there on top of his, you know, the rack element in the vertical that he provides. But both incredible wide receivers. And the lesson is in this class, like you have three wide receiver ones pretty much, as opposed to last year where we didn't know if we had one. This year you have three, and I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100% about this year being, I mean, last year's receiver class wasn't even bad.
No, and I think it aged very well in that first year for sure, but you know, this year
very well.
Is different.
Very well. But you know, certainly the one player that that stands out to me, and maybe this is because I've gotten into it a little bit and had to take a hard stance with trying to project Brock Bowers to being an instant success from a fantasy perspective, right? So we saw the tight end one last year, not to get too fantasy, but Sam Laporta would finish as the top scoring fantasy option at the tight end position last year. You know, it was a second rounder out of Iowa. Loved his game coming in. A lot of it has to do with where he goes in the NFL as far as the scheme and how they try to get him the ball and manufacture touches. And that's the thing with Brock Bowers. You can just get him the ball. You can designate screens. You can even give it to him on like jet sweeps or like just get the ball in his hands and let him create, because he's that special as a talent, as a yak creator. He's great through contact. I see a ton of twitchiness and fluidity as far as being able to, move agilely for a guy that size at the point of contact, and obviously has the strength to be able to bowl through defenders if all else fails. Gets upfield in a hurry after he catches the ball, natural ball carrier. I really like his hands. I think he can, maybe not the widest catch radius of any tight end we've ever seen, but certainly serviceable enough. His body control for playing the tight end position is certainly among the elite. And at least, and that's what I see, right? And I do see a special athlete, a special mover in space, and can win in a variety of ways running routes. The only thing that really stood out to me as a potential concern, I mean, maybe not the biggest size profile prospect at the tight end position that we've ever seen, but I actually saw some bad reps when it came for him getting off of press man coverage, like a little lack of refinement with his feet and having a plan, just kind of wanted to win with power, just, bulldoze somebody off the, off of press coverage. But outside of that, there's very few holes in his game and what his impact as a playmaker, just a weapon offensively, is something that if the right system, the right situation falls upon him, I think he could have a Pro Bowl type season right from the jump and could develop into an all pro talent down the road.
Yeah, for sure. I think the terminology that we use for him very often, I I've had this conversation with several people so far this cycle where, how do you value a tight end in round one, right? You know, it's kind of the conversation that you always come back to if you have a guy like this, Kyle Pitts. It was kind of the same deal with him when he came out. But Bowers isn't just a tight end. He's a weapon, exactly like you said. Like, you can use him. I harken back. Wow, that's a... that word just came so naturally. I don't know why, man. I don't even like that word. I think back to Dalton Kincaid from last year's cycle. He ended up being my tight end one, just slightly, over some of the other guys, but to end up going round one to the Bills. And you heard Brandon Bean talk about him after they picked him. And it was, hey, when he's out on the field and we got him and Dawson Knox, it's not 1-2 personnel. It's 1-1.5, because he's a big slot, essentially. Like, we can line him up out wide as a slot receiver and let him get that space against the defensive back. I think Brock Bowers is the same way, where you can line him up in line if you want to. I don't think he's a great inline blocker either, and that comes with the size deficiencies too. I think he's a little bit better if you get him on the move or play him at H-back, right? But I do think you can scheme him touches, like you said, get him out wide, and he's a pretty solid route runner. I think, like you said, there are some instances where he can improve. There's a little bit of hip stiffness sometimes when he's sinking back toward the ball, and then also the release where it can improve. But on dig routes, like, he can cut sharp angles. He's got really twitchy footwork. I think he's an energized athlete in short spaces. And then that explosiveness, that vertical speed to work up the seam and separate. And then once he's at full speed, right, this dude is a 245, 250-pound ball of butcher knives. Like, you're not stopping him with a solo tackler. So, just the amount of things that you can do with him as a rack threat, as a design touches weapon, and then up the seam too. Like, hey, he doesn't have the largest catch radius, but he can attack the ball. Like, he can snare it with the best of them. So I think there's a lot to like with him. And we hear the conversation, is a tight end worth picking this high, right? The things that he can do vertically on the horizontal plane, and then just kind of increase the duplicity of your offense. I think there's far more positive arguments to make for him than negative. So Brock Bowers, tight end one of the best weapons in the class. I think we're both in agreement there. Another tight end in this class who I think gets slept on sometimes. I was very happy to see how he performed at the NFL Combine, because I think that opened some eyes for him. Jatavion Sanders has been tight end two for a lot of people so far this class. Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, though, has been my tight end too from the jump. I really loved his 2022 tape. He played even better in 2023. Played well at the Senior Bowl too. And then at the NFL Combine, 40-inch vertical, I think 4.68, high 4.6, 40-yard dash. I think it has 6.82 3-cone, which is really good for a guy who's 6'4", right, 250 pounds. And you look at the tape with Ben Sinnott. I think, you know, it's tough because I don't want to make the same Laporta comparison, and I'm not. What I'm doing here is explaining how Laporta won in his rookie year, right? You know, it was because he was so easy to integrate into that Ben Johnson offense. Like, he's a really good route runner over the middle, really strong hands over the middle, really good zone awareness, you know, kind of steering behind defensive backs, full route tree, fluidity, right? Enough explosiveness to work with that speed, and a good rack element because he's got good size, he's physical, right? The leg churn. Ben Sinnott, to me, has that kind of appeal where I know I can integrate him into any offensive look because he can play from H-back too. He can play H-back, inline, the slot, even out wide. Another guy who's just very versatile. With Bowers, I think the reason that he can be scheme touches as a rack threat a little easier is because he's just so explosive and fast in the contact balance. Ben Sinnott isn't quite at that level as a weapon, but I think as a tight end who can create independent separation while also providing the H-back value and enough rack and then strong hands over the middle, Ben Sinnott to me is just a converter. He's a converter with great utility. And I think someone's going to look at that full route tree, that fluidity for his size, and think like, hey, I can maybe get my version of Sam Laporta here. And so Ben Sinnott to me is a guy that's still getting slept on, but I think just the amount of things that you can do with him, again, not quite the weapon that Bowers is, but the all around universal utility piece and just that full route tree, that separator. He has a lot to like, honestly. He's been my tight end too. I'm locking him in there, but he's another one that I like. Have you seen Sinnott, much of Sinnott yet? How do you view that tight end two conversation?
I've seen a little bit of Sinnott. It's really hard sometimes to try to envision, is it just an inline tight end? Can he operate out of the big slot, or is he an H-back type? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a guy like Jaheim Bell out of Florida State, I'm not saying he's my tight end too, because he's not, but he's an intriguing athlete. Like, there was times where they just give him the ball, let him create. Mm-hmm. And there's moments where tight end is because like an evolving position that makes it very tricky. All the things you mentioned with Sinnott make sense to me though. My tight end too is Jatavion Sanders, but I have Sinnott in my top five. And I certainly understand all the points you just made. And certainly he looks natural. Like a lot of his movement feels effortless. And that's why I can see the projection and why you're so high on him, because I see what you see. It's just, there's the element, like you mentioned that he's not as twitchy or as explosive as Brock Bowers is. No one is at tight end. That's an unfair comparison.
It's like, let's make that clear. Like, the bar that Bowers sets is like up here. Like, it's like, hey, you're not hitting that. And I think, yeah, to your point, I completely agree. I was looking for the way to articulate it, but Ben Sinnott isn't quite as like, he's just so smooth. And a lot of it is effortless with how he channels that acceleration as a route runner, right? You know, when on digs and things like that, and comebacks and post routes and slants, like, you know, just very seamless through his redirections. And I think, you know, people weren't expecting to see a guy who tested with a 40-inch vertical because he's so smooth and effortless. And it's something that's, you know, it's not, sometimes with guys, their explosiveness, it's right there. Like, you can see it. Like, that dude accelerates. He's got jets on his shoes, right? With other guys, they infuse it into their game so seamlessly that you don't always see it operating. I think Ricky Pearsall from Florida is another one. And mm-hmm. we didn't mention him in our favorites today, but another one who tested really well. And you go back to the tape, I didn't see a 42-inch vertical, but the more you look at how he stacks guys and how seamlessly he stacks movements, right, and how he operates with that athleticism, some guys just make it look so effortless that that explosiveness, that athleticism doesn't always catch your eye because it's applied in such an efficient way. I think Ben Sinnott is one of those guys for sure, though. I think he's one of those where, you know, he has the functional athleticism to maximize that operational framework. And that's what makes me so high on his potential at the NFL level. But we've talked about tight ends for long enough. We've got a lot of wide receiver ground to cover in our favorites. I know we talked about how deep this class is, and we kind of went over some of our favorite guys. Yesterday, we were sending a list, and you know, we could go down the board with our day two options. I'm a big fan of Jalen Polk. I know you like some of the guys in day two, but you provided one name that was very, very intriguing to me. And I was really glad that you brought this name up, because we get into the day three, we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but the depth still continues at that tier. So the wide receiver that you brought up is your favorite and that you wanted to talk about. Give the listeners the name here and tell us why you like him.
Well, out of Holy Cross, which immediately is going to ask, well, you know, okay, if he had a ton of success or a ton of production at Holy Cross, you know, why should we believe that that's actually going to translate to, and it, you know, producing that much against NFL caliber talent? Look, the way that he runs routes, there's nuance in it. There's a plan. There is fluidity, deception, attacks, leverage. I mean, there's the way he uses his hands at the top of his stem too, like just little details, like either whether it's a wipe or a wipe move or anything like that, just to get people off of him at the top of his stem. I see something with Jalen Coker out of Holy Cross, and watching him attack the football, Ian, I don't know if he's aware that he's allowed to let the ball get to his chest. Like he's like, you talk about snaring it. I mean, that ball looks like it's his, and there's a wide catch radius. He's actually got ideal size. Like, and I was actually surprised by, I believe it was his vertical jump and his broad jump. I don't have the numbers right off.
Yeah.
The top of
I just
head.
Looked it up as we were talking about him. And yeah, cause I remember the size explosiveness was really appealing with him. 6'1", 3'8", 208 pounds is what he weighed in at the combine, almost 33 inch arms too. So you've got that catch radius, right, and then had a 42.5 inch vertical and a 10'8" broad. The 42.5 inch vertical is in the 99th percentile among wide receivers. So that explosiveness, that vertical athleticism is off the charts with him. And then, as you mentioned too, he's got the size, the catch radius, but then even more important, the most important thing is the authoritative catch point technique and instinct. And that's what he brings to the table.
No, I keep, when I had a chance to watch some of his all 22 and to just take a quick look at it, it's pretty impressive, man. And there's his ability to be able to attack the football. Like you said, the technique, the body control at that size, which is quality size. It's not like he's an undersized prospect. I actually think that he can come in and potentially flex outside or give you a little bit out of the slot. I think that there's also the ability to kind of some of the reps that I really liked is his ability to identify zone and to throttle down, sit down, make himself available to the quarterback, and how he comes back to the football and attacks it with his hands and then screams up field. I mean, he's not a great yak threat or anything like that. I don't see that, but I do think he can give you something there. But I could see him contributing, you know, to an NFL roster in 11 personnel sets. I think he's a nice player. And despite him playing at Holy Cross, I went holy moly. And it was just like, this kid can play, man. So he's somebody that really, really caught my eye. His route running nuance was really, because I kind of saw some moments where there's patience and waits to be able to kind of get into the defender's space, gets them to commit, and then engages and snaps down and gets in and out of his breaks. Like there were multiple examples of that. I didn't write down the opponent, but it's there on tape. And if you're, no matter who you're doing that against, if you can run routes, you can run routes. It's just going to be the separation though. I mean, his 40 time isn't exceptional, by any stretch of the, or he's an elite by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. That, you know, his vertical speed is somewhere that I don't think he's going to be able to give you a ton there, but his explosive elements, in short area ability to fire his feet is something that makes me believe that he can separate at the next level.
Yeah, he's sometimes like as detailed and kind of intrinsic as the wide receiver evaluation process can be, sometimes it is as simple as, can you separate? Can you catch the ball? Right? Like, you know, I hate making it that simple because there's so much that goes into it, but that's the most important thing. Like, can you separate? Can you catch the ball? And obviously there's a lot that goes into both of those things, but you know, with Jalen Coker, you know, and I haven't gotten a chance to watch him in depth yet. I'm hoping to do that sometime this or next week. But from everything that I've seen, right, the hand technique is very good, the ability to attack the football, and I think maintain authority in contested catch situations, because it's not just about attacking the ball. It's about positioning yourself too and timing your vertical attack, right? You know, all of these things work into it. And he's very good at that from what I can see. And then you look at the ability to stop at stems and redirect, right? cut those sharp angles, the footwork as well, the ability to press vertically with that explosiveness. Like you said, you're not going to scare a DB out of his shoes with that speed, but he can use his explosiveness to throttle up and kind of manipulate the tempo and leverage. And I think that's just as important if you don't have that speed too. So, you know, one of those guys who gets slept on. Do you have a succinct grade on him yet, or are you still kind of working on that?
I'm still working on the complete grade, right? So, I mean, but one thing that in particular at the wide receiver position that I like to see is how do they use their hands? Because, you know, at the, you know, either in their stem dry phase or at the break point, you know, whether it was chop, I had it written down in my notes. I saw, you know, some chops, some wipes. I loved his hand usage. Also, I saw a rocker step, pressure step. Like there are certain technique and nuances that I really like on his tape that surprised me. I didn't expect to see that amount of detail from Jalen Coker. I was just kind of wondering if, okay, is he, you know, just bullying up on, you know, bad competition. There was a lot more detail, a lot more meat on the bone than I expected. But at the end of the day, yeah, his ability to attack the football was one that certainly stood out to me. I love his hands, and you know, as a day three prospect, I don't want to, you know, get into hyperbole and you know, go, oh, well, he's got the best hands in the class. But he's up there. He's certainly farther up there than I originally thought when I looked at his tape. I was pleasantly surprised, Ian, is the way that I would probably phrase it.
I love it. I love it. And I'm very excited to get my evaluation on him too, because, you know, as you go through this process and the more you get into it and the more confident you get with your own evaluations, you're like, all right, let me just plug in the numbers and see what pops out. And then sometimes you get some surprising results, like maybe Jalen Coker being a little bit higher graded than we expect. I think if he does fall to day three, though, a guy who can be a really good sleeper in the right situation. So absolutely. You talk about strong hands, and I got to put my stamp on, and I'll give you the chance to put your stamp on a day two receiver that you really like too. It's up to you. I'll let you think about it for a little bit, because I know I'm putting you on the spot. Sure. But Jalen Polk to me from Washington is one guy that's one of my favorite offensive playmakers in this class, and I've been pretty consistent with that over the course of the cycle. I think that entire Washington trio, in fact, is just really good. I think Jalen McMillan gets forgotten sometimes too. Was, you know, battling injuries at times, but really good route runner, really good vertical speed as well, very good hand technique as well. I just think, you know, sometimes he'll get in his head and drops will kind of snowball a little bit, but a guy who I think once he's fully healthy can be a really good component to a wide receiver rotation. But I look at Jalen Polk, and I see probably one, and I hate using successive cycle comps, right? Like I just mentioned Sam Laporta last a couple minutes ago, and I'm going to mention Puka here. I hate doing that, and it's not a comp for me. I want to make that clear, but it's kind of a way for me to communicate how he can be successful or more successful than some of these guys early on. I look at the way that Jalen Polk can be utilized, right? Another guy who Roma Dunze was the X receiver, right? You know, and they occasionally schemed him touches across the line, you know, moved him around, but he's that guy you can put at the boundary and he can just work, right? Jalen McMillan took a lot of reps from the slot. You know, he can play the boundary as well, but he was more oriented in the slot. Jalen Polk kind of fell between them. He was that movement Z in that Ryan Grubb offense, and he was using, you know, motions. He was getting out in space, using that hip fluidity and kind of going off motions to, you know, undergo drag routes, crosser routes. His route tree can still get a little fleshed out, but I think things like redirection quickness, the hip fluidity, intentional head fakes to kind of compound with your legs and your feet, he has all of that too. And then the thing that really wins me over with Jalen Polk, not only does he have all the building blocks to separate from any alignment, from any, you know, kind of spot on the offensive front, he also has that explosive capacity to generate late snap separation, and then he attacks the ball too. I mean, his hands are like glue. That's the thing that stands out to me. There's catching the ball, and then there's catching it when you have a defender inside your frame extending for it as well, you know, getting that proper hand positioning, getting it close to your chest after you gather it, and then protecting it from the ground once you hit the ground, right? I think Jalen Polk checks all those boxes to a T. Any way that you can grade hand technique and hand positioning, one of the best that I've seen. And I think his ability to separate and kind of, you know, provide that alignment versatility from any spot for an offense and then just convert it to catch point. To me, sometimes it's that simple, right? We go back to that. Sometimes it's that simple. And he checks those boxes effusively for me. So I'm a big fan of Jalen Polk. Who's your day two guy that you would stamp in this receiver class?
you know, just to add on Polk, I've seen folks, listening to other content creators say or try to pigeonhole him as just like a zone beater, that they have concerns that he can't create separation against man. I'm not buying that noise. I'm with you on Jalen Polk. I'm really, really high on Polk. Now, I got to ask you, does Ladd McConkey count as a day two pick? Because I know he could sneak into the back end of the
first. We'll say he counts. And
I can go with Ladd McConkey as kind of my cop-out pick, because that's like saying, oh, well, you know, Xavier Worthy, if he falls to day two. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, Worthy or Adonai Mitchell. I mean, all these guys are like, you know, probably late.
And that's the tough part with this wide receiver class. We have no idea who's going to be there after the top four. But yes, I'll give it to you.
I think in this situation, and maybe you agree with me, the fact that it's such a deep class, I think, is going to push some of these receivers out of the first round, because teams feel like they can confidently get a difference maker on day two. That's, you know, obviously you want to take the best available and you know, guys that you feel like can come into your system. Speaking of people that can come into the system, you know, Ladd McConkey, sure. He has I love his release package. Saw a bunch of diamond releases, different, you know, obviously he can beat you with a speed move, single move, double move, understands how to attack leverage there. His STEM IQ, Ian, I love it. And I know that he wasn't a high volume target earner in Georgia's offense, but the route running nuance and detail and setting folks up at the top, heading into the break point. And then, dude, he's dropping defenders off at a different bus stop when he tries to get out of his break and gets them turned around. And then he's got the suddenness and twitchiness to be able to get in and out of his breaks and create extra separation with his burst. I mean, I think he's one of the few guys that can generate college type of separation heading into the NFL. And I don't think he can just do it out of the slot. I think it's lazy to suggest that he's just going to be a slot guy at the next level. Do I think that's where he's the most effective? Probably. But I think he can operate on the outside. I think he can win outside. And the vertical speed, I know that we previously talked about McConkey. He ran faster than I thought. Mm-hmm. I thought probably mid to low 4.4s. You know, cracking 4.39 was certainly something that caught my eye. You know, the only place that I don't think he dominates is at the catch point. But he can, as far as a separator, he's among my favorite in this class. You know, so he's certainly somebody that I think is going to probably be a day two pick, and he's my favorite of the bunch.
Real quick, like, how many receivers do you think could, and I want to put could in quotations, because, you know, we're, you know, the thing that we do best in the draft season, in the draft cycle, is speculate, right? Like, oh, this could happen, right? How many receivers could go round one? I mean, MHJ, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas Jr., we're at four, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, maybe. We always said McConkey. I'm trying to think.
I mean, I don't think Troy Franklin should. After his combine. Yeah. I think he kind of his stock dropped a little bit. I do think the number is eight legitimate.
You think Leggett could maybe sneak in there too?
I don't. Yeah. It's nothing against Leggett. I actually, you know, like his profile and think he has a lot to offer. But there are some questions and about his prospect profile and the fact that he's not an early declare, right? Yeah. It, you know, it played 5 years.
The late breakout.
Certainly something. Yeah, the late breakout with only 1 year of production, I think maybe makes folks raise a little bit more of an eyebrow and pushes them down the board into day
two. Yeah, and that's one thing, like, with late breakouts, I give prospects the credit if they break out early. Like Xavier Worthy, for instance, he got to Texas on day one, was the man, right? Like, he was separating, he was generating vertical pressure, you know, all of those things he did on day one. With other guys, if they have a late breakout, you take it case by case. I know Leggett dealt with some adversity once he hit the college stage, so that could have delayed his development as well. So I look at what he did in 2023. It was very impressive, but if that is something you factor in, it could be a tiebreaker with other guys like Worthy, for instance. So the fact of the matter is, though, a lot of receivers who are very, very talented in this class. I'll throw in one quick shout out and then we'll pivot to running back with the remaining time. Malik Washington from Virginia. I wrote him down as one of my favorites. I know he's commonly mocked as a day three guy, but I like him on day two. I would take him on day two. If you need a slot guy, I think he can be your slot. I think he's got the twitchiness to, you know, he's got diamond releases, split releases for sure. I think with, you know, lacking length, he's never going to be great in press, which is why he'll probably be relegated to the slot, I think. But, you know, if you give him that cushion, he's got great stem work, man. I mean, his foot fire release, his ability to cut tight angles on digs and breaks, I think, you know, he's top tier. And he's very explosive. I think he had over 40-inch vertical, and it shows up with his film. Mm-hmm. Like, the dude is a compact ball of energy, really physical after the catch, but then at the catch point too, even for a small guy, he attacks the football, and he's not afraid. Yeah. So I love that ability, you know, getting over 100 receptions at Virginia, breaking the receiving records with in a passing attack that wasn't even very consistent, right? Like, that just shows like how good he is, I think. And, you know, I think it's definitely going to relegate him to a certain role, but I love what he can provide within that role. So actually a top 80 prospect for me off of my grade. He can separate, he can catch the ball, he's a firecracker from the slot. Love what he has to offer. But we'll get to running backs for the remaining time. We've been talking about wide receivers.
I know I could talk about Malik Washington too, but I mean, I love everything you just said. I'm 100% on board. I want him to go on day two. I think he's going to be a hell of a football
player. Any team who needs a slot receiver, like, that's your guy right there. But we talk a lot. We knew we would. We're over 35 minutes now. So running backs for the final 10 minutes here. I think we both wrote two running backs, which is interesting. This class, real quick, just like 15 seconds. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about this running back class?
I think it's going to be better than people think, right? Because, there's not a definitive running back one at the top of the board. There's not a generational prospect. There's some damn good players mm-hmm. at this running back position in this running back group. And I could see a ton of them having a role, which in today's NFL, you want contributors to play specific roles in a lot of different scenarios. The day of the old, you know, bell cow feature back, you know, that sees 25 carries a game, that's very few and far between in the 2024 NFL landscape. So can these players come in and play a specific role? A lot of these guys, I specifically think that they can. The ones that are really intriguing to me, though, Jalen Wright has one hell of an athletic profile. Yeah. And his burst and top speed that I saw on tape, in particular, you know, obviously the house call that he had against Georgia in 2023, man, is moving. And you saw that at the combine, where that's a pretty damn impressive, you know, physical frame. And the strength does translate as a ball carrier, but that hyper explosiveness is something that really stood out to me. I want to see more from him. And there's a reason why he's like probably not going to go. He's not the definitive top guy in this class. And I don't have him as my top guy. I have Trey Benson as my top running back prospect. Yeah. But Jalen Wright excites the living hell out of me. And I think that there is so much potential with him if he can get into the right running back room. I think he will contribute to a backfield on day number one in a complementary phase, and who can develop potentially into a leading man for an NFL backfield.
Yeah, he's explosive. He's got speed, and he knows how to use it to press into blocks and kind of manipulate DB angles. So that's one thing that kind of gives me solace. I think when he encounters contact threats early in reps, that can cause hesitation. But if you give him space to work with, he can use it, and then he can, you know, generate home run plays too. Another guy that you mentioned that was really intriguing to me, Tyrone Tracy Jr. from Purdue. I know he's been a little slept on to this point, but he has a really, really intriguing profile. And I think what you mentioned first with running backs, you want them to have a role, right? This is a guy who's probably one of the best pass protectors in the class, first off. So, yeah, you know, coaches aren't going to be scared about having him out on the field on third downs. But then also, he's a former wide receiver. I did some digging looking back, and in 2019, he was Iowa's second leading receiver behind Amir Smith-Marset, with I think 589 receiving yards. So he has a legit wide receiver background, and he's out here playing running back now. 5'11", 209. I think he ran a 4.48 at the NFL Combine, 40-inch vertical. I think a 3-cone in the 6.8 range. So again, really, yep, really good composite athletic profile. You got a chance to watch his tape yet? What have you seen?
So it's funny that you mentioned the yardage totals, and someone's going to say, oh, that's not that many receiving yards. Consider it's the Iowa offense.
I was going to say, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, come on.
Just let's remember that it's the Iowa offense. But so he has that in his bag. Mm-hmm. But he put on 15 pounds of muscle and to change positions to the running back spot. And I still think he's learning the position. But there is such, I mean, in my notes, I have just exciting amount of versatility when it comes to dependent on whatever type of scheme that you want to run. I think he can be effective in gap or zone schemes. I think he has a really exceptional feel for trying to navigate through traffic for a guy that hasn't been playing the running back position for all that damn long, which means I think that there's room for him to grow and even get better. Same can even be said for Isaac Garendo of Louisville, but we're talking about, you know, Tyrone Tracy Jr., who I love his athleticism. I think that there's his hip fluidity just seems like a very natural mover, Ian, like that excites the living hell out of me. Sharp cuts, change of direction, has more because of the added weight. He hasn't really lost that quickness or suddenness or burst, and can play through contact way better than I think people are giving him credit for. So there's just a nice skill set to work with entering the NFL. And you throw in that he's a willing pass protector and has the capabilities to be a weapon, not just a contributor, a weapon in the passing game for an NFL offense. I think this guy going on day three, some team's going to get a hell of a value in Tyrone Tracy Jr. I think he can contribute to an NFL backfield. And, you know, if he can, the reads are still inconsistent. Yeah. When it comes to his consistency, being able to generate leverage by pressing the hole and then being able to, and that comes, I think that comes with reps. Mm-hmm. Just there isn't a lack of consistency when it comes to that regard. But as far as his athletic profile and his ability to like change directions very, very, very effortlessly in traffic and play with more contact strength than I originally expected. There's a lot to work with for an NFL team. So I'm really excited about Tyrone Tracy Jr. out of Purdue.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's one of those guys where he's mainly viewed as a day three guy, but I could see him being a top five running back off the board just because of how many boxes he checks. And, you know, again, like how much security he has. Like, hey, we know he can be a pass catching threat. We know he's a great pass blocker. He's incredibly athletic. Let's let him learn the vision side of things, you know, at the NFL level. Maybe he'll never be an elite processor behind the line of scrimmage. Maybe he'll never be an elite guy with vision and creative instincts. But just the amount of security that he has is a really strong rotational back, right? In the modern NFL, that's what you're getting. You need a rotation. You need one or two or even three guys who can, you know, provide comparable value at, you know, on a down-to-down basis. He's got that. And so I think that gives him some security. If he's still there on day three, which I do think he'll probably go day three, there's a chance he sneaks in late day two if a team really, maybe, really, really likes him, because the athletic profile is there, right? So I think if he does last till day three, he's not going to last much farther beyond that, because that's the sweet spot for him. We've got around 2.5 minutes, so couple of running backs that I like. Will Shipley from Clemson. And you mentioned hip fluidity. I'm really glad that you mentioned hip fluidity, because that's a trait. As I continue evaluating the running back position, that's one that I realize I value a lot, I think, because you definitely need to have vision and creative instincts. I think that's a baseline thing. But once you have that, I think being able to redirect and navigate through those congested lanes while keeping speed and accelerating out transitions, I think hip fluidity and being able to realign your hips quickly at the drop of a hat is really important for that. And two guys that really stand out to me who have that trait, Will Shipley might have the most fluid hips in the class. He was a five-star recruit, really natural runner. And I think he gets overlooked sometimes. I'm still solidifying my board, but I think he'll be my RB2. I was thinking about Jonathan Brooks from Texas, but the more I watch the two of them, I think I like Shipley more. I think Shipley is incredibly fluid, very explosive too. I think, again, that gets overlooked because he's so fluid and natural, but he's a really good receiving back too. He can run orbit motions. He can run flat routes out of the backfield. He can even rotate in the slot if you need him to. So I think there's a really versatile framework with him there. And then I think another one that I like a lot, Blake Watson from Memphis. He played Old Dominion earlier in his career. That's my late round gem that I love. And I've been on that train for a while, but some 5'9", around 193. So a little bit on the smaller side, but I think for his size, has really good contact balance and leg churn through contact. And he's also a former wide receiver. He played wide receiver in high school. He's got that all-encompassing route versatility, whether it's running routes out of the backfield or in the slot. And I think his vision, his patience to me is really impressive, because he's not the explosive athlete that Tracy or Shipley is, but he's very patient behind the line of scrimmage, and he can wait for holes to open up. And he's very good at keeping leverage, keeping the pressure on, but not diverting too early. And then, you know, at the last second, capitalizing on the right lane and getting some solid yards. So Blake Watson, to me, is my late round gem. Will Shipley is the guy that I think deserves a little more love. We're about to get out of here. Derek, any closing thoughts for the listeners here today on the offensive class?
No, I want to keep talking, but we got to sign off. Hey, we got to get to people what they want. That means just subscribe, you know, and tune in next time, I suppose, as we continue this conversation heading into the 2024 NFL draft. I've loved talking to some skill position players with you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we've got some fun podcasts coming up. We're going to have a QB checkpoint, our final QB checkpoint before the draft at some point. Also, the date for my finalization of my big board, April 15th, I believe. So we'll have a podcast going over that as well. So a lot of fun stuff. We'll try and get another mailbag before the deadline as well. But that's all we have for today. Thank you all, as always, for listening in. Thank you, Derek, for showing up today and providing some great insight. Until next time, peace out. Have a good one.